Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And we have another great show dealing with metaphysics and spirituality and science. And, well, we'll call it anything you might want to call it tonight. It's going to be studying the idea of how you create a spiritual group. And most people say, well, oh, spiritual group, I know what that is. Isn't that where you all sit around and meditate and say things like, Om, and, you know, that sort of stuff. And then, don't you go out and, you know, like, feed the poor or do something like that. Well, that could be a spiritual group. I mean, it's possible. But the important thing tonight is to first define what I mean by a spiritual group and then how they get created, because they don't come out of thin air. They actually come out of something else, which I'll describe. So I thought it would be good to go over this tonight because it's such a kind of perplexing question, because there's so many myths and so much in the, we'll say, in the mistaken consciousness of people, mostly based upon kind of New Agey stuff, I'll call it, things that are more material and outward issues that don't really have a lot to do with what I consider to be spiritual. And it seemingly, oftentimes, is greatly misunderstood. So hopefully we won't get to that level tonight. We'll be understanding what a spiritual group is throughout the night and by the end of the show. Okay, to begin with, spiritual group. What do I mean by that? I mean a group of people who, by their choice, have decided, based upon their own efforts and thoughts and behaviors, to create some level of virtue or enlightenment in form around them. And they have done so oftentimes without recognizing the very thing I just described. In other words, there's no requirement that a spiritual group be founded by people who declare themselves to be a spiritual group or even spiritual. That is not the definition. And some groups that declare themselves to be spiritual groups are not necessarily spiritual. And the reason for it is spiritual means the thought of our Creator. In other words, that is representative of God's thought. And if a group is creating along the lines of God's thinking, then it is a spiritual group of people. And when I talk about all kinds of different ways of understanding the word, even group, and to realize that this is something that 99% of the people who are doing spiritual work would not consider themselves doing spiritual work, because it isn't their focused, you will say, method of doing good, virtuous things, to recognize it in some formalized fashion. In other words, it's part of their nature to do it, and it's inclusive in virtually every activity they choose to do, especially as a group together, but they don't necessarily have to have that understanding. More so that those who teach this concept of spiritual in one way or another will have a better, we'll say, grasp on and possibly awareness of being spiritually in a group, but that isn't always the case, even though that's more likely the case. So those who are teaching something spiritual are more likely to understand they're doing it collectively than those who are not. All right, that sounds like a reasonable thing. But then we come to the question, what about all those folks? And I mean there's the vast majority, who do not recognize that they're in a spiritual group. Does that make it some way bad, or like they're they're going to eventually fail because they don't get it or whatever? And the answer is strangely no, because doing good is, first of all, its own reward, and secondly, it has no consequence to those who do good to not be aware of or understand, which is pretty far off of the, we'll say, normal way of thinking about this, that they are doing good. It's kind of a weird thing. You could say, well, how would somebody do good all the time or a lot of the time if they didn't know they were doing good? Well, this is a strange issue because the fact of the matter is that some people don't really pay a lot of attention to whether they're doing good or not because they have an inner mechanism, their connection to their creator. Directly, they can sense it with two senses, their heart and crown chakra. And they, well, as long as they can be aware of it from that perspective, they don't have to be conscious of it beyond that sense of awareness. Awareness is experience. Consciousness has to do with, in part, thought. So it is a clear difference. And the people who have beyond awareness, the thought, usually do have more of a teaching side to them. But that isn't necessarily always true either. You can have people who are both aware and conscious of their doing spiritual works with others and be completely conscious anywhere it's possible. So it's an interesting, and not necessarily be in doing anything in the teaching area. Okay, so that part I hope is clear, because that in itself is a major confusion to so many people. Do spiritual groups have to be physically in one location? And the answer is yes and no. If there are certain kinds, if they're in certain kinds of groups, which I'm going to define in a few minutes, no, they don't have to be physically in contact, but they need to be possibly etherically, like through telephone or computers, et cetera, in connection with each other. And those kinds of groups are actually much greater in number and have much greater numbers in them than the kind that can't be spread out all over the place in any communication through, you know, electronically. And so the majority, the vast majority of spiritual groups are actually not even in the same vicinity of each other. It's an interesting idea, isn't it? It's kind of a strange one for many people. And then the next question is a spiritual group some kind of legal entity, like a non-profit organization, or some kind of maybe undefined through that question of issue, but maybe they're a group of people who have started an organization that they call the, you know, the groups of people who choose to be a group without any name or anything. Can they do that? Yes. Anything is possible, because spiritual groups are created by the act of creation itself, and so ultimately they vary about as many, much as there are as many as they are. By their very definition, there is no two spiritual groups that will be the same. I mean, is it possible? Possibly once in a Googleplex, which is like off in a mathematical chart. Very, 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 very unlikely. Why? Well, we'll get into that in the show tonight. Why they are so varied and why they don't have, you know, you can't say, well, they're all in this way or all like that. Each group is as different as the individual in it, if you really must know. So it's a kind of another really strike against the, we'll say, the norm or what people believe spiritual groups are. And you could see how I'm moving far afield of what most people believe is true. And you can just believe or think I'm wrong, which is okay. Because that's the other thing about spiritual groups is that generally they're run by one common factor, if they succeed. If they're successful, they generally have some level of humility among the majority of their members. Now, that doesn't mean that they have, like, this ultimate humility and everybody functions as a soul. No. As a matter of fact, humility is still in short supply, even in spiritual groups. But it's generally found to be more often the case that a significant number of people in a spiritual group exercise some level of humility greater than the overall level of the rest of the world, you know, populations of the world. And so this is a big deal. Now, you might say, well, where did that come from? Well, you see, the creation of a spiritual group, its foundation is the soul. Ah, now we're getting somewhere. Its foundation is the soul. Now, the soul expresses itself through a human being because we are here, and it is in another dimension of time and space. It doesn't have our senses or bodies, so it can't exist here. And if it did have our senses and bodies, it would have the same failings that we have, which is numerous. Our levels of selfishness and illusion are caused by having to take on bodies and senses that are so grossly imperfect for the realm that we're in. They feed us all kinds of weird and wrong information. That wrong information is then turned into a kind of body we'll call knowledge that then is applied to various parts of existence, and when we do so, we oftentimes reduce our levels of awareness and consciousness by making a separation between us and other life, and especially our Creator. And this separation, which we might call mistakes, is very serious. It creates a kind of, we'll call it, spiritual isolation. That spiritual isolation is a significant problem, and souls can't tolerate it on their own. So they create a sub-being, us, that humans, that can, with great effort and difficulty, tolerate it in this realm, the physical, but with great suffering. And you might say, well, why do souls create a being to go off into a dimension of time and space where they suffer? And the reason is because this is the place where God is needed the most to grow in life, and where life is most reduced in that growth by there being a lack of godly, virtuous things being created by life itself. Human beings are a major factor in that in the physical world. We are the most spiritual permanent residences, so to speak, of the physical world. All those things called, you know, the next kingdom of souls that are graduated souls, not like our souls, they can temporarily hang around in the physical world. They don't really live here. And so this is where we live. And we live here for a relatively short time because it just wears us out. Why do we age so quickly? Why do we get so many illnesses? And why do we die after a relatively short period of time? Because we wear out our bodies because of the illusions we have. That destroys our senses and our bodies and invites various diseases. And eventually we just die. Yeah. So our short life expectancy, or relative short life expectancy, is the result of our own selfishness. And the self-centered effect is to retain energy in our centers, slow down the chi that moves through us, which is a force of life energy. And when chi becomes slowed, it becomes toxic, and when it becomes stopped, it becomes deadly. So we do this on a regular basis, and this is what causes us to have these kinds of problems. Okay. So there we have the basic foundation of the human dilemma, we'll say, and humans, by themselves, find it extremely difficult to live as a soul on a singular alone basis. Souls, by nature, live collectively in consciousness together. When human beings try to reach the level of being their soul, they find it, in today's world particularly, extremely difficult to live as a soul without the assistance of others. So, the human being is created by its soul and oversoul and Monad and God and everything else that's above us. We all have a hand in creation of us. We are created with this urgent need, we'll say, to, at some point in our development, to seek out others, to create more of our Creator, and we don't necessarily have to know that's what we're doing, or even think it. It's not necessarily a part of our consciousness, unless we're teaching it, or in rare circumstances, for other purposes, when we're advanced enough, we may choose that. But still, it's a phenomenal question that needs begging, or begs to be answered, because the problem is that most humans are totally unaware of it. You look at the, you know, okay, if this is really the plan, get everybody to be create a creation of a spiritual life and then find others to do this with, even if they don't know that they're in a spiritual group, they'll function as one and they'll create more light in the world. But then how come anybody isn't doing it? I mean, there's a vast number of people and a very small number of actual spiritual groups, although it's not as small as you might think. I'll get into that. But it's still, I mean, why isn't this, like, working? Something isn't working, right? And the main problem is that humans are not only saddled with this problem of illusion, which I already have covered, to a very small extent, I agree, but the other side of the coin that is also a distraction and an obstacle to human actually getting more spiritual in finding or creating a spiritual group, which I'm going to get back into the creative side in a second, is that there's a thing called karma. Now, how does that enter the picture? But most people think of karma as what I did yesterday is going to have some problem for me tomorrow. That's really not the way it works so much. Karma is cause and effect being separated by the reduction of or separation of time and energy connected together. And so time getting separated from energy, energy can be formed. And sometimes people take actions that take hundreds of years to come back in the direction of where they will be. But people don't live for hundreds of years. They don't. But there is some part of a person that does. And that part of a person is called a spiritual set of genes. Okay? No different than, in many respects, than the DNA that creates a true human gene and genome for a human being. The, we'll call it etheric, astral, and monastic correspondence of what we think of in physical terms. The physical still exists, but these are made out of other kinds of dimensional energy, so we don't know much about them other than that they resemble the physical side. So, we have spiritual genes. Well, when we're created anew with a new personality, each human being has a composite of some of the spiritual genes that they had in some prior lifetimes. This is complicated, so I'll get up. But the thing to remember here is that it's the soul working with other souls and our oversoul and the monad, et cetera, that create this composite spiritual gene set that we're going to have in each lifetime. And they do so with the full understanding of the karma attached to each spiritual gene, of which we have many, many thousands, and how it will express itself through that human being in the coming life. This also has to do with cycles and time, and how the universe goes through a series of cycles. Some of it has to do with what a lot of people call astrology, although, strangely, it's easier to understand it from the angle of energies and time than it is from the astrology side, for me anyway, because the astrology side is abstruse and it doesn't really explain the concepts. It's just sort of, you know, most people are trying to find out something they're going to do in the future or have done in the past. It's a little superficial for me. But the important part of this is that in each lifetime, each one of us, each human being, is going to experience a certain karma because it's already built into what made us. Now, what we do about the karma is more important than the fact that it's going to be expressing itself. If we head it off and change the way that we may have reacted at the time we separated time from space and change it to a more virtuous reaction, we do not experience nearly the amount of forces that we would if we don't head it off and create more selfishness or just stay as selfish as we have been and were at the time we created the karma. Then we get hit with the brunt of forces. Forces causes destruction to our senses, causes aging, all the stuff we talked about earlier. And it also reduces the benefits of qi and turns qi basically into a negative. So this is the point. This is the big deal. It's the karma that makes people have such varying, difficult, suffering, short lives more often than it is just the illusion from that specific lifetime. The two come together and produce one heck of a wallop if a person is truly ignoring God. The secret to getting through this is to keep your spiritual senses, your heart and crown chakras, open as much as possible and to serve as much as possible. Now we get back to the spiritual group business. The level of service that somebody can create for themselves and others is extremely small when done on an individual basis. And the reason for this is that it's gotten so complicated to spiritually serve because the world's much more complicated. And there's so much more accumulated karma from all the lifetimes of all the people who have lived that this makes it more demanding on us to be able to create virtue and to have a spiritual life. It used to be, and it wasn't that long ago, about 100 years ago, that people could reasonably expect to create a fairly virtuous life without doing it in concert with others. Honestly, you could. 100 years ago or so, the world was getting much more complicated. And the ability to create virtue became, we'll say, beyond the grasp of most people who wanted and could, to some level, create some level of spiritual meaning in their life and spiritual good in the world. So this is a great change, we'll say, because there was a turning point. It actually was just after 1925. And that turning point was that in order for most spiritually active people to be successful in overcoming their karma by creating more good than not before the karma hit, so to speak. And using it as karma as an opportunity for being spiritual in service. But in order to do that, they needed the assistance of usually two or three more other people at a minimum, and sometimes dozens, even hundreds of other people, to be able to achieve it. So this is where the dilemma became part of human existence, because for eons, humans have been able to either work together as a spiritual group or individually as a spiritual disciple, but not necessarily part of any kind of group of others, to achieve some kind of spiritual outcome in the world. Now, these days, that's almost gone away. It's the dinosaur, we'll call it, of spiritual creation. So, groups have taken on a more important element than they ever were. There were always spiritual groups. It just said now, in order to spiritually serve, most people have to be a member of a spiritual group to do so. Even though they don't know that they're in a spiritual group, they don't even necessarily recognize what they're doing is spiritual, they still need the help of others, the assistance of others, to accomplish what they want to do. Now, this is this is nothing new if you are a student of this, but it may be something new for you if you're just a casual listener, say, of things like the show, or read a couple of books, you may not have been aware of this. Now, you might say, well, I don't like groups. I hate them, you know. They're always getting into problems. Personality problems, right? Yeah, no doubt about it. To serve in a spiritual group is much harder than to serve individually. But the benefit is, by a factor of a huge amount, much more productive in terms of creating light, virtue, in the world than to try to do it on an individual basis where you're more likely to virtually do nothing and to fail even at that. So the results are now that spiritual groups become a crucial element to part of the creation of God here. Now, God exists, of course, everywhere. But the creation of God in life itself, because life is God's growth, according to certain premises in ages. And so, ultimately, the creation of our Creator comes from some cooperative group level of work, which most people don't even recognize is a spiritual group. Wow. But it's become necessary, and so we respond to it this way. And again, most of these groups aren't even physically around each other. So this is a whole other part of the situation. But nonetheless, this is the package we are in right now. This is what we bargained for in coming here, if we're going to create a lot of virtue. Now, people who create a lot of virtue are called spiritually disciplined, because in order to achieve the creation of virtue, particularly in the physical world, we have to limit our senses so that we can see God better, and so that we can straighten out all the illusions that we have. And that requires a thing called spiritual discipline, which means that one sense at a time is thought of in a way that makes it respond better to being able to serve others. And then we move to the next sense, to the next one, and eventually try to get them to work two together, three together, etc. And as we're doing this, our sense of God goes up. And then we have a better understanding of our purpose in this discipline that we're doing. Almost everything in spiritual terms is backwards. You usually have very little clue about why or even where you're going in spiritual service before you discipline yourself and actually do it. Yeah, that's kind of like the upside down kind of way of doing things, but it is what happens more often than not when one is following a spiritual life. This comes from the problems of karma and illusion the difficulties of personality involvement between people. And so it just creates this kind of backwards kind of way of developing ourselves. Human beings are intricate and unfortunately have flaws all over the place. All right, so we've gotten to the point now where we can kind of define what kinds of spiritual groups there are and what makes them different. And then after the break, I'll start discussing what creates a spiritual group. Because there must be some kind of mechanism, and I'm going to explain it to you. It's a little complicated, and it's very hidden and esoteric, and most people don't know anything about it. So that's got to catch you. You know, you're going to say, oh, well, I want to know about that. Yeah. What are those things that nobody else knows about? Or not? Okay, so that's kind of the tease for the next few minutes. Okay, so the types of spiritual groups that exist fall into three very broad categories. The first has to do, all three deal with where a person is in their level of spiritual discipline. And the first kind, which is called first level of discipline, spiritual groups, these kind of groups are sometimes also referred to as first-level initiate groups. So I don't like that word too much. But it's still okay to call it that. And in either case, these are groups that people usually devote a certain amount of their time and energy to, which is relatively commensurate with their level of spiritual discipline, which then is commensurate with how much illusion and karma they're still facing. They're usually the youngest of the spiritually disciplined people. I'm not talking about age now. I'm talking about a number of lifetimes they've done it for. But there are exceptions to all the things I'm going to say. All right, so these first-level groups are all over the place. They're the easiest ones to find yourself in. They can have large, large numbers of people in them. And sometimes they have subgroups. So you have like, oh, a group of 20 here and a group of 40 here, and they belong to like a whole organizational like structure or whatever. But they have some commonality. And collectively, it's still a first level kind of group because their time and energy is limited to about somewhere around 10% of the amount of time and energy that they have. They also will not devote much more than 10% of their money, because money is just compressed time and energy, to their service. And that's about it. You know, they'll devote about 10% of their time, about 10% of their money, about 10% of their thought, and they discipline themselves to about a level of 10%. Yeah. That's average. Now, some people reach 20% or better in these kinds of groups, but they're the more successful people in the groups. And some don't get anywhere near that, and they bomb out. You know, if you can't maintain at least a 10% or better, usually you don't stay in the group more than a year or two. And a majority of people actually do that. They don't stay in. They may come back a couple times, but they don't stay in better. Like a couple years. Some go 2 to 5. But these kinds of groups are in vast numbers, and they are in every field. They're not just some kind of, in some kind of religious organization or some kind of special meditating society or something. None of that. They cover all walks of life in every way that people can associate with each other. The hallmark of what they do, though, is they are functioning for 10% of their life on a soul level, and they are giving of their time and energy on that soul level. And they are also, for the vast majority of them, do not consider what they're doing part of a spiritual group. They may be running off to save the whales, but they may not see this as a spiritual enterprise. Many might. The majority probably don't. And so it's a very interesting and complex situation among this vast number of people, this is almost all the people that are in spiritual groups are one of these kinds, are just clueless as far as that they're in a spiritual group. I mean, maybe 90% of them don't know that. But that's what they're doing, and I'll explain more about that like in the second segment, because we're going to run out of time in a second. But still, it has a it's a kind of a chilling effect on some people to say, wow, there's that many people who are doing all that stuff, and those are spiritual groups, but they don't even own their spiritual groups. That's right. That's right. It's okay. And remember, there's no penalty that you don't know. Okay? No penalty at all. Just keep doing good things. All right, so then what other kind of spiritual group? Well, that's called a group service group. You might say, what's a group service group? Well, group service groups are always providing service to other groups. Sometimes it's other group service groups, and they're collectively working together, like I said. Sometimes it's to other groups that I'm going to tell you about. And that's the thing they do. They're in service to other groups more than they do anything else. That's what they do. They do service to the world to some extent. Small parts of the population are affected by them at all times. But they're not. Their impact is very slight to the overall world in general. Okay, so the next type of spiritual group is called a national spiritual group. It is more specific to the goals of a nation or a collective of nations, and it is about really, we'll say, a much more difficult kind of virtue to create. Now, you could say, well, why is it more difficult to do things on a national level than just running around serving other groups and doing stuff like that? Well, because when it becomes national, the amount of time and energy needed to achieve the goal goes up from 10% to anywhere from 25 to 50% of a person's existence. That means that 10% of, or 25 to 50% of a person's time and energy is literally devoted to the service of the nation. Wow, that's a pretty big amount of a person's life. That's way bigger, way, 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 way bigger than people doing group service work, you see. So that's something for us to consider. And then, finally, there is the world service group. Now, what's so different about that? Well, and by the way, the group service groups usually have numbers in the hundreds, but it isn't anywhere vast in numbers of the group service groups. Okay, and then finally you reach the world service group level. Now, what is a world service group? A world service group is a group of people who have committed 100% all of their time and energy to spiritual service. And that includes, by the way, all their compressed time and energy, which means all of their money. All of their money. They make money, they spend it for spiritual service. It's all used up in spiritual service. They live to spiritually serve all the time. Is that difficult? Oh, my God. Because human beings are by nature selfish. And they say, well, what's for me? You know, but they're not those in world service groups, because they won't last. They won't be able to spend, they won't be able to stay. And so the result is they give 100% all the time. Wow, huge. That's a biggie. And there are all kinds of ramifications. Now, what are they doing? Well, they're doing things that affect all the nations in the world, all the people in the world. They're trying to serve in ways that can broadly be described as, in some ways, as a service to all of humanity and also the lower kingdoms, in cooperation with sometimes higher kingdoms as well. This is a big deal. World service groups seldom have more than 12 people in them. And we'll talk about that and much more when we come back. So, about 2 minutes and 30 seconds from right now, we'll come back and talk a lot more about the creation of a spiritual group.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. MacFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight we're talking about a creation of a spiritual group. And I believe we may still have a caller waiting to say hello and speak. So let's find out who that is. Hello. Can you hear me, caller?
Yes. This is Janice.
Yes. Janice, is that your name?
Yes.
Hi, Janice. What can I do for you tonight?
I have a question.
Yeah.
My husband committed suicide suddenly a year ago.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And I can't come to grips with what's my meaning of my life now, and I don't know, like, how to move on and accept what has happened.
Uh-huh.
And I just wondered if you can offer some insight.
Sure. Well, first of all, you certainly have my condolences, and I can feel your pain as you speak about this. The important thing here, Janice, is that your husband is in consciousness, not dead. He's in another dimension of time and space, and he is living another life, another full life, and he remembers you. He has a complete and full understanding of his past life here. He is more capable of doing even, we'll say, more virtuous, more good things in that other life, because his consciousness is a little bit higher than when he was here on average. I don't know your husband, so I'm only speaking about him in terms of general terms. Okay. And he definitely loves you as much or more than he did before he left this world. The only thing that might distress you a little bit for me to tell you, but I need to explain it, is that he's living in a different time element than we are. He, for every day you live here, he could be living 2 weeks or more where he is, or less, a little less, but it's somewhere in that range. And so his life is expanded in, of a sorts, because he lives more time in the time that you live. That means, in some sense, he's had to miss you for a longer period of time than you have missed him. Your position could be, and if you choose it to be, to go on living in this world, of course, and to do live even more, we'll say, in tune with what you feel is your purpose to be here. And as you said, you're not sure what the meaning of your life is. That usually means that too much maybe of your meaning in life was about your husband and not about what it means to be here beyond just having a relationship with a great, wonderful other person. That's part of it, but there's a lot more to life than that. And he's learning that probably where he is, and maybe he would love to be able to tell you that now that he's over wherever he's specifically at. But the point is that you can live a much wider and more creative life, a much closer to your creator's life, if you choose to, and then you'll have more meaning in this life here than you've been having for this last year. The loss you feel is not just the loss of him, although that's huge, but it's this, what am I here to be, do, et cetera, feeling. What is life about now that he's not around? And there's a huge answer to that. It's much bigger than anything I can tell you on a couple of minutes on a radio show. But definitely, there's no question that you are here to do much more. And I wouldn't want you to think that just because he has gone over to the other side that somehow you should or must be with him. Rather, you can do great things here and still be with him when you go over, depending upon when and how. There's no guarantees about any of this, though, because, you know, that you're both living now lives that are somewhat separated. But it all depends on the nature of each of you as far as what the future might be in that respect. More importantly, you need to focus on being here and doing things that are truly meaningful for you, which probably are going to involve creating more light in the world rather than just totally missing him. I hope that is some help. And I'll tell you what, you can get the number to talk to me off the air. I'd be glad to talk to you more. I can't take much more of this particular show up. Okay. You're welcome, of course, to listen to this show and all the other shows I've done for the last 8 or 9 years. They're online. You can listen to them. But the point is, you can also, if you want to talk to me privately, there's never a charge for that. I'd be glad to talk to you and help you understand this more. And I hope this has been some help for you.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right, Janice, you take care and keep listening.
Okay.
Thank you for listening tonight.
Okay.
Bye-bye. All right, so let's continue on the creation of a spiritual group. When we look at spiritual groups now, we see that there's a model for them, we'll call it. It has three very specific kinds of dimensionality to it. And it's all based upon how much time and energy, and therefore how much spiritual discipline someone is going to do to sacrifice that same time and energy for personal or selfish reasons. That's what it's all about. It's a very simple kind of model. I know a lot of people will take offense with this because it's almost insulting to people to think that if they're in maybe a group service group, well, I'm only giving 10%. Yeah, it's a wonderful thing. If you're giving your 10%, that's great. But the thing here is that you can do more if you choose to do more. And in each step, you've got to spiritually discipline yourself or your personality will rebel. What does that mean? Well, there's a part of us that just doesn't want to give anything. It just wants to get something. And if you're in the part of the population who doesn't want to really give much on a spiritual level, period, that means on a connection with your creator, then you won't be in any of these groups. And that's where most people are. This is still a small segment of the world, you know. And that's okay, too, because this model is created by greater beings than humans for the purpose of allowing us the choice to either create our lives in a more spiritual fashion or to not. And there's nothing that says you've got to do it this way. You know, some people come here and just say, hey, I'm going to have a good time. That's it. All right. go out and have a good time, see what happens. Of course, they may regret that. Like I was telling Janice, we go on to live in the astral world. Well, in the astral world, people become more conscious than they were while they were physically alive because they have less illusion. The physical senses are the most illusionary of all the senses. You give those up and you go on to the astral world where your form is created almost exclusively out of astral energy, which is a totally different kind of physics to it. And so you have a different reality. You're getting more complete information, more, we'll say, full information, which then gives you better knowledge and better consciousness is built from that. And you don't make as many mistakes, and your life becomes actually more meaningful. On an average, not everybody who goes to the astral world does that, but most people actually do. It's a tendency, and it's like God's grace. Every step of the way, we get a little bit better. I'll take that, even if I don't deserve it, they say. But, you know, it's a good deal. And so for people who don't want to be part of a spiritual group, fine. And people who are finding out that there is one, but they didn't realize it, fine too. That's okay. And for people who are in it and now want to know how to understand that and maybe develop it more, that's even better. Because it does take conscious spiritual discipline at some point to advance yourself to the higher levels of each kinds of these spiritual groups. Yeah, you could become a member of one and not last very long and kind of bomb out. But the point is that to get yourself really further along and to get closer to your Creator and bring some light into the world, you need to do this really diligently. It's hard. And for some people, they don't. And others, they do a pretty good job at it. Now, what about all the other people in the spiritual group? What are they doing? Well, they're doing the same thing. Everybody's struggling. Everybody's having a hard time. People in group service groups, generally, their level of struggle is of such a nature that they burn out pretty quick, but they sometimes have great moments, honestly. They can do great physical things sometimes that are, over a few years of time, maybe 5 years, they create some wonderful things. And collectively, they work so well because when one leaves, maybe another one enters almost instantly, and it's no big deal. And it's like we'll call it a spiritual revolving door situation, but it's not that bad. And because there's so many members, and it kind of averages itself out to the point where they're able to sustain themselves on a fairly constant level. But they grow slowly. That's it. The change is not easy. The larger the group, the slower it changes and grows in the sense of purpose and newness to new ways of creating virtue. They tend to stick with the tried and true and the old because it's hard for them to find radical newness. And they sometimes become stalwarts and do not act in concert with groups more advanced than them because they, in their stick-of-the-mud fashion, say, well, this is really level of creation, and I don't want to create anything any much greater than this. It'll shake everybody up, and half the people will leave, and then what? That's the problem with these with group service groups in general, is that they have a kind of hollow core that is easy to crack sometimes, and they have vanished, literally, even large ones, in a very short period of time, when they come in conflict with the fact that they haven't grown very much and the world around them, maybe for one reason or another, because of need or because of true spiritual creation, has. And so that's one of the dilemmas the world faces in general. And when you get to world service groups, the reason you can't have more than 12 is because, to begin with, the level of creation is extremely high. Oftentimes, the teacher of the group, who's like a creative generator, and the leader of the group, who is oftentimes the processor of that creation, so that it gets gets realized through the efforts of all the group members. The only way to do this is everybody has to be working near optimum levels. That means 100%. There's like very little room to achieve the goals of a world service group in terms of time and energy, spiritual giving. You need to be very close to 100% of all the members all the time. And so these groups, you can't get much more than 12, because if you had 20, if you had 30, you'd never even get half of them. To be at that level at any one time, the group would keep failing. It's a strange thing. So really, the smaller groups are sometimes more successful than the larger, and the largest is usually 12. Sometimes, if you don't count the teacher, you can have 13. But the point is that it's still, and that's if there's one of these big teachers in there. What's a big teacher? A big teacher is an advanced initiate, somebody who has direct contact with the spiritual hierarchy. But at any rate, so the point is that if you're looking at the real difficulty in world service groups, it's that the demands are superhuman, and the people are human. Because superhuman is like you got to be almost perfect, and human is you got to be, or you are, very imperfect. And so the clash is that these people are controlled by their personalities more often than they are by their souls, on an average. And when their personalities are kicking in, things are crazy. The group doesn't serve, and it doesn't do that well. World service groups, though, are absolutely needed, and successful ones are virtually what the world is resting upon to survive during the next century or two. So this is no easy thing to deal with. And if we were to examine this from a logic standpoint, it's about as illogical as you can get to make such demands on such imperfect creatures. A lot of people say, well, if the whole world is dependent upon such few people, what level of success do we think this is going to have? And this has been a debate here on Earth for a very long time, because Earth is doing this crazy experiment, we'll say, in trying to fight some of the worst kinds of evil using the most anemic system called initiation system, spiritually available. It's the weakest, the most radical to attempt to accelerate the development of human beings, with the highest level of failure. Well, who came up with that idea? Why not go with the tried and true? Why not just take another 10 million years? Who cares? Let's get it done right. The problem is we don't have 10 million extra years, and that's why this plan was decided upon. And you can say, well, why not? Well, 10 million extra years will allow enough evil in some parts of the universe, different galaxies included, to grow to toxic levels and cause great real problems. We're a laboratory here on Earth. Earth is the experimental place. And some souls that are big into experiments are here right now. But the problem is that they're using this system, this initiatory system. When you bring in all these spiritual human beings who are so imperfect and screwed up, and they don't even get along, they fight with each other. I'm talking about in the groups. And when you get to the world service level, they're failing like flies, dying them off, killing themselves. I mean, it's terrible stuff. And why is this happening? Well, because we don't have enough time. And it's all about the choices made by our souls. I know it's hard to understand this. Our souls and more advanced souls that are liberated souls, our souls are kind of trapped in the monastic world. But the point is that we're doing this because we are a part of our souls. And when we were joined in consciousness with our souls, and we're going back to that. Remember, it's a cyclical thing. We're going back to that. I want Janice to know that, too. Her husband's going back to being more and more soul-like. That's why he's more conscious in the dimension. But there's other dimensions, Janice, that he has to go through, and he will eventually be a soul again, so will you. But as our souls, we choose to come here. We choose. It's so nutty. We choose to come here with the most absurd odds against us. I mean, it's like, I got a 1% chance of making it this time. 1%. Some souls know this, and they still do it anyway. And you can say, whoa, but why did I decide it? I don't want to do it now. This just sucks. This life is suffering. It's miserable. I don't want to do this. That's what a lot of people say. I've said it myself. So, and if you're in a spiritual group and you're failing in a spiritual group, for sure you don't want to do it. So the point is that then why do we do it? Because we decided to when we were in a more spiritual frame of mind. When we knew who we really were and what we really wanted to do. And once we knew that and understood it, it didn't matter about anything else. Some of us lose that way. And when we lose that way, then we can't be part of it anymore. Being in a spiritual group may be toxic for us. And being anything other than a selfish personality may be too painful. It's a problem. And it's a problem because we go around and around in it. It's why we go through hundreds and hundreds of lifetimes, often without having any memory of the past lifetimes while we're physically alive. And that's what the big deal is about. Now you might say, well, would it help to remember? Maybe. Maybe not. Just think if you remembered that the person that you're going out with was your mortal enemy. Two lifetimes ago. Or that your mother was your friend or daughter or who knows, cousin some other time. Or maybe nobody you ever even knew. I think the point is here that the idea that it's somehow meaningful to remember a past in which there was so much disorganization, selfishness, and destruction from your own failed choices is not necessarily a benefit. The benefit of having a past life comes to those who are creating virtue successfully. And guess what happens when you start creating a large amount of virtue successfully? You start remembering your past lives. Only relevant to the things that you need to know at that moment to create even better virtue, but it still works. So, yeah, you can tie your connection to your past lives by creating more light in this life. So that's a good thing. But you can't do it because you want to have that information. You can do it because you want to create more light, and as a result, you happen to remember something that you couldn't remember before. There's a benefit. But the payoff is not from a motive of wanting it. It comes to really a self-forgetful position of just wanting to create more life. Souls do this whole thing over and over again. Now you can say, well, why doesn't the soul help out more? You know, we're here. It's in the higher mental world someplace, wherever that is. I mean, you know, why isn't it saying, hey, Joe, get it right. Don't you know? You could be more virtuous. That's what we chose for you to do this. So get with it. Well, it's weird, but the soul is telling us that. We just choose to turn it off. Yeah. We turn it off. I mean, it's absolutely a choice. We choose to turn it off because we have selfish desires. We have selfish wants of form, things. We seek things. And then we have selfish beliefs and thoughts that are exclusionary to other people. And that's what's doing it. That's why we can't hear it. And so when we have those thoughts, which is unfortunately most of the time we're physically alive for sure, we don't hear our soul. And we are very distant from God. Because the soul is sort of like the mouthpiece of God. And so it just doesn't go through. When I speak of the soul, I'm talking about the oversoul or solar angel, inner guide, you know, that connection between those beings. It's all, to me, the same thing. But they are different beings. I recognize that. But it doesn't matter. Soul is a soul. And so the point is that here in this it is perspective. Of course, we're so illusioned that we don't even try to hear what our soul's trying to tell us. And so, guess what? You know, you turn on the radio, it's Friday night, and here I am telling you, I'm not your soul, but maybe I'm sort of like a little tiny mini messenger saying, hey, out there, are you waking up? So this is, you know, and it's every day, it's all the time. It's not, unless you're evil. Now, if you're evil, you'll probably put too much distance between yourself and your soul. It may have just quit. Said, oh, forget that human. And because you're not listening. You know, if you're not going to listen, you just, you know, and you completely turn it off. After a while, there's no reason to keep messaging because you're not listening. And so then you got a real problem. There's nothing to listen to. Although if you start listening, it will come back. But, okay, and luckily most people never get near evil, so it's not a big deal. They're not going to get, you know. If you are, and you know it, you got to do something real fast to change it because it's the worst. There's nothing you can do worse to yourself or to anyone else. Get out of it. Okay. So, we are here because we need to connect with our souls. We need to create virtue. And it's through the creation of spiritual groups that humans have their best shot at doing this right now. And here is the rub. Okay. We're pretty selfish. We're pretty lazy. We have great illusions. And generally, we're just not the nicest of beings. So how are we going to do this thing with the creation of a spiritual group when we have all this garbage, karmic stuff and everything else? I mean, it seems like we're, you know, totally screwed. We're not going to get anywhere with this thing. But that's not true. That's not true at all. We can. And the way we can do it is through an interesting process. And I'm going to tell you about that now. This is the fun part. Yeah, I'll take a break in a few minutes for those of you getting tired, but don't worry. Let me start in this process. We're given some interesting paraphernalia that goes with our mental body and connects to our soul and to this, you know, the inner guide, solar ray. And so the thing is that we you know, have this connected to us all the time. And it's so amazing because it's like always having a phone line that is connected to our soul. We can just pick it up anywhere, whenever we want. And not only that, but we can connect our phone lines together with others, provided that we serve together in what we call, what I'm calling, a spiritual group. There's an actual thing about us that allows us to do this, and it is given to us just from having created light before. So it kind of sidesteps and overrides the karmic problems that I talked about earlier and allows us to get a clearer picture of things. What is it called? Well, some people call it the lotus. And the lotus eventually builds a thing called the Antahkarana, but it's a whole bunch of fancy words. What really is it? It's a field of energy. A field of energy that is so specific that it connects to parts of our mind. Not our brain. The brain is like a storage device. It just holds a lot of information. The mind is something else. The mind is the part of us that can think. Okay, and it's not the brain. And our mind has the ability to access these energy fields that are part of this thing called the lotus, which is like, just think of it as a collection of energy fields that have to be turned on and then developed by service. And in the present day, because of the complexity I talked about at the beginning of the show, it needs, in most cases, to be through the creation of group service, because we need the connection not only between us and our soul, we need the connection between us and other souls through other people, and we can actually connect our energy fields with their energy fields, and we don't even have to think about it or do anything except co-serve. But there is a caveat. If someone were to choose to specifically discipline themselves to develop these energy fields, they could actually move ahead very quickly. There's quite a bit of danger in doing that. And that created something else, that knowledge of that fact, helped myself, me, and others that are part of a group I'm in, spiritual group, to develop a thing called synthetic yoga, which is based upon the same idea. But at any rate, here's the point. Here's the point, that when you join a spiritual group, you're really joining into an existing web, we'll call it, although that's another word that means something else spiritually, of these energies that are part of their lotus structure and this eventual developed in service structure called the Arctic Sun. And if you don't join a group, but you actually just create a group, it doesn't really matter, the same thing happens. And when you join a group, you create yourself into the group by connecting parts of your lotus, and not the Quran, with the parts of the others in the group. That's what it means to be in the group. That's it. That's what is a spiritual group, is that you have these connections. And that means your thoughts have a collective collectiveness. They're joined together so that you believe in a common way of serving. Okay, that belief in common service, and then followed up with your own actions. It has to be followed up with actions, by the way. Builds this connection. And the connection becomes more and more strong over time. Wow. The correction is based upon the amount of time and energy that you're putting in to the spiritual group. You see? So people with world service groups, provided they stay up with the time and energy model that everybody else is doing, get very tight and close and able to do wondrous things. People in room service groups, it's much less because they're putting less time and energy in. Of course, it's all that time and energy. Wow, pretty cool, huh? I think it's great, really. Okay, so with that in mind, I'm going to give us a little bit of a break here, just about a few seconds. And then I want to mention to you, so I'll give you a minute or two of a commercial, we'll call it, but we'll talk about 5-Chi Jesus. But anyway, I will be back in about 10 seconds, and then we'll talk about 5-Chi Jesus. Okay, now we're going to talk about 5-Chi Jesus. Now, let me talk about, first of all, if you didn't hear, you should know by now, it is on sale for an extended period of time, and you can get it instead of a $50 a bottle, $30 a bottle. Now, what does it do? That's the big bottle. If you want the smaller bottle, you can get it for $12 a bottle. And what does it do? Well, for most people, it helps them to relieve aches and pains. I mean, it does a lot of things, but that's what it basically does. Now, I was talking to somebody today, and he said it didn't really help him. He took like 6 to 8 hours, which is what's supposed to. Actually, they were given to him for free, so maybe we should have charged him, it would have worked. But no, I'm kidding. And, you know, everybody has a different constitution. And what Jesus does is it helps to move qi energy. Now, some people require just a huge amount of Jesus to move a little bit of energy, and for them, it may not work. And for others, it does the reverse. It is so fast and so amazing. It's the best pain reliever they ever had. Probably 90% of people get relief with Jesus and 10% don't. But, you know, what can I tell you? It's one of those things you just got to try. If it doesn't work for you, you get your money back. And if you got it for free, you just smile and say, oh, it didn't cost me anything. But, you see, the point is that this stuff does work. And it works for a large number of people. It just doesn't work for everybody. Like, everything doesn't work for everybody. The biggest problem is moving energy. You can't move energy in people who are like drug addicts, and sometimes people who are heavy smokers and others, because there's too much retained energy. That's a problem. And I don't want to kid you that. If that's one of the things you're doing, it probably isn't going to work to take music for you. But it's sometimes even worth it for those people to try, because you never know. Everybody's unique and everybody's different. Jizik, Fai Chi Jizik. Check it out. You can call 602-431-5762 if you are interested in getting some, or you can go to buyjizik.com on the internet, buyjizik.com, and check it out there. Okay, so now we're going back to tonight's show, and we're going to be talking about the remainder of this connection that people build for themselves when they enter into a life script of wanting to be of spiritual service. The creation of a spiritual group can be spontaneous. You can have several people just say, hey, in their conversations or whatever, let's do this good thing for others. And if it's people who are willing to commit 100% of all their time and energy, which would also be all their money and everything, that would be a group instantaneously being formed as a world service group. Those are rare, if you think about it. I mean, how many people do you believe in the world just get together and say, well, here's all my money, here's all my time, here's all my energy, plus I'm going to build myself up 10 times greater and give all that further. Not too many. That's a pretty rare deal. But a lot of people will do it at the 10% level, in that range. I mean, that's doable. And that's in some religions, that's what they ask, you know, at least to some extent. And so it's there, and there's a connection between the religions and Angel's Wisdom, because most of them have a connection together through Angel's Wisdom. And so this understanding of how souls work really was put into those religions by people who were spiritual disciples. Okay, so can most people who are doing some form of spiritual discipline be part of a spiritual group? Yes. And can they do so in ways that are extremely meaningful? Yes. Remember this, meaning in life is determined by the amount that you co-create with God once you have developed your lower self to the level that is satisfying but also boring for yourself. So once you reach that point, and just making yourself into a better dancer or a person who knows how to recite poetry better or who is better at fixing cars or whatever, whatever you think is important for your lower self to develop, once you get past most of that stuff and you say, well, that was interesting, but my life is not that meaningful now, then you look at, oh, maybe it's time to create more light in the world. Maybe it's time to co-create with my creator. Do good things. Help others. Be a soul, which means to help others to be souls too, not just to give to them. Don't think about giving in some wanton fashion. That's bad. Unwise giving is never helpful. It doesn't work. But if you can wisely give, and you can give much wiser when others are assisting you, because then you don't go off the beaten path and make terrible mistakes and whatever. So you can then change your life into a much more meaningful life by creating more of your creator within yourself and helping others to do the same. That's what a soul does. here in the physical world. And then you automatically will co-create yourself into or co-create another new spiritual group by using these energies that I was telling you about that are inside your spiritual mind and also, well, even your mundane mind in the maniastic part of dimensionality, which is part of us. We all have it. We don't sense much from it because we're physically overwhelmed by the senses in the physical world. So we don't know that these extra-dimensional parts of ourselves even exist, most of them. But so this is the way that a spiritual group is created, either anew or added to by those who join them. Wow. Now, there's a whole system to this, and I'm going to go through a bit of it. I don't want to bore you all with the great details about it, but I do want to add some kind of reality to it, because a lot of what I'm talking about, it sounds so conceptual, but there's a practical side to this thing, and I want to talk about that. When you join a spiritual group, or if you're co-creating one together with others, you're going to usually choose one of the pathways that can be developed through your lotus and develop the spiritual connection of your lotus to the Yantra Karana, or the rainbow bridge, some people call it. And these energies are going to be related in the beginning to usually one, what they call petal. It's actually an energy field. And that energy field is going to be dominated by one of three kinds of thought. Three kinds. The first will be about knowledge. And most people will gravitate, actually it's true, but most people, or at least the plurality of people, that might be the best way to put it, will gravitate towards knowledge as being their focus in going into a spiritual group trying to do some kind of spiritual service with others. That's a more common way of doing it. Now, you might say, well, what's wrong with that? There's nothing wrong. That's good, fine. You want to go the knowledge route. Then what you're doing is you're gaining knowledge while you're using the knowledge you already have to be of service, co-service with your other people that you're co-serving with in your spiritual group and other groups you may be connected, that group may be connected to. And you're growing that knowledge so that you can be of greater and greater assistance. Knowledge is fine. It's the easiest way to proceed in development through a spiritual group. It has a limitation. And the limitation is that knowledge that does not become eventually sacrifice and consciousness becomes an obstacle rather than a means for spiritual development. So you eventually can't hold on to knowledge and say, gee, I know everything. I can tell you anything you want to know. I know. It eventually becomes a closed door. It's an open door in the beginning. And generally, I'm going to give you some numbers. Generally, knowledge works okay for people in the first year or so in a group service group. So that's okay. You can go down the knowledge road. And it works fine in a natural service group for 5 to 10 years. And then it works okay in a world service group for 10 to 20 years. So you say, well, that's a long time. Yeah. But then you have what is known as the paradox of knowledge. Those of you who have read Afterlife Love, you probably know about that section of that book, where one of the characters goes to the monastic to the third subworld of the Astroworld, where they think very mentally, and he participates in some groups there where there are discussions and where the paradox of knowledge itself becomes evident in the discussion. I don't want to tell you more about it because you may want to read that book, but the point is that this is the problem. This is the problem in pursuing the knowledge pedal alone, is that you have only two ways to go with it, and I'll explain those two ways. The first is that you use it to expand your knowledge and help others to gain knowledge. A lot of people would say, well, that's good. Yeah. But then you have to eventually use the knowledge from that pedal, that energy field, to become a soul. And that's a whole other place you've got to go to in the higher mental world. And when you do so, you can't stay with the knowledge pedal when you move to the next level. You have to switch to, this gets complicated, either the consciousness pedal or to the sacrifice pedal. Consciousness, same as love. And for a lot of people, this gets confusing. It's all heck. It's a, what are you talking about? Why can't I do that? I just want to stay with knowledge. I'm willing to create knowledge as a soul. I'll do it. Creating knowledge as a soul, very hard thing to do, because that means that you don't want the knowledge to attain anything physically, astrally, or even mentally for yourself. So to get to the second stage, some people call it the second tier, you've got to actually, all the knowledge that you have has to go to serve others to get to that next level. And then, when you get to that next level, you can't even stay with knowledge. You got to kind of switch gears. And so it is a real problem for people who get entrenched in the knowledge. It's a real problem. All right, so that's an interesting paradigm, because now we have some direct application of this thing, even if it's as esoteric as I probably ever have talked on this show. So if half of you out there are probably saying, what the heck is this guy talking about? I've listened to him for 8 years and he hasn't been this far out. It's because this is real esoteric knowledge. This is really getting into what the intricacies and difficulties are about spiritual groups. It's not as simple as most people think, because they don't understand. I'm trying to bring this level of understanding. What that means is going to be like a little more complicated and more brain-teasing than it has been in the past. Okay. So, what about people who start off functioning in a spiritual group along the love side of their minds, along the side of consciousness? Well, consciousness is very different from knowledge. Consciousness is the ability to take any level of knowledge and connect it to things that you've never thought of before. And to create somewhat through this way of giving to others so that they can continue to give. And it's a wonderful thing. Consciousness is the real foundation of love. It's wonderful. But people who start off in a spiritual group in consciousness have a more difficult time than those who are doing it through knowledge. If you go into a spiritual group and your design or focus is on consciousness, then right off the bat you have to be more humble. Yeah, that thing, yeah, the humility deal. And if you recall those who read Afterlife of Love, this was the great bugaboo about the people in the third astral subworld. They are humble. They have all this knowledge, but they are humble. Yeah, right. And so it's a difficulty. Okay, so if you go in and you're searching for this tremendous humility in yourself, and you're willing to reach this state of being truly humble, then that puts you into a position where you become the little teacher of the group, which is a big deal. Now, you could say, well, can't people who are in the longer knowledge thing become the little teacher of the group? They can. Absolutely can. I mean, there's nothing to stop that. But usually their lack of humility is what their problem is, and they have a certain egotism and other issues that block them, because the knowledge tends to stimulate that. And so So this is where group dynamics really get a hold of people. You find groups having a great deal, spiritual groups having a great deal of difficulty. Okay. Then, I'm skipping over a whole bunch of stuff here because we just didn't have enough time to go into the intricacies of this whole thing. A lot of you are going, good, don't tell me anymore. My brain's already fried. All right. Then there's people that enter a spiritual group. And remember, this comes in at different levels of time and energy that they're going to put in the group. And I'll try to explain that in a practical sense, too, if I have time. Okay, so some come in, and this is the most difficult one. They come in willing to make the sacrifice. Sacrifice, what are you going to sacrifice? And the sacrifice is a little strange, but I'll describe it for you. It's that they're going to cease being creative in the physical world for the sake of being creative in the group. And that's the sacrifice model. More people fail at it than succeed because it's so difficult. And few try, and even fewer succeed. Now, why would somebody go down that road if it's so hard to do and people usually fail at it? This is a model. The whole model is based upon freedom of choice. Every person that goes into spiritual groups are there because of their choice. If they stay, they stay by choice. If they leave by choice, and that's just the model. That's the way it works. So, yeah, it's all based upon what you want to do. Some people say, well, I like consciousness. It's great. I'll work on my consciousness. I like knowledge. That's cool, too. But ultimately, I want to be of sacrifice. Now, what does sacrifice really mean? It means being super creative, but not for yourself. Why is it so hard for humans? More hard than it is for them to build consciousness or knowledge. Why is it so hard for humans to create for others rather than themselves? Why is that such a hard thing to do? And the reason is that to a human being, the very meaning of existence is creation. And to the human being who hasn't done enough of it, creation that is totally given to others is a sense of death or dying. It's a feeling like that, a hollowness in one's existence. And that's a challenge, is to get past that hollowness, to create for others, and you receive nothing. Tough, tough job. And the failures almost always go out and are successful in the mundane world, but they can't create within the group. And so that's where the tug of war comes. You can say, well, why don't they just switch over to the consciousness or switch over to the knowledge? They theoretically could. It's very weird, but it's easier to solve the equation by creating more in the group than it is to solve the equation of how to switch over to consciousness and knowledge. And that's too complicated to explain in the time I have left, so I won't. It's something you could think about, though. I love those little brain busters and brain teasers. So you could think about why that might be true. Okay, so anyway, what about the people who succeed with this? Well, if you succeed with the sacrifice deal, and that's a big deal in itself, then you hop up. You go. You go up. And you would not go to the sacrifice on the second tier. That's right. You would go to the sacrifice of the second tier. You would become a teacher for sure, and most likely a little teacher to begin with, but eventually you might become a big teacher. But still, you become a teacher much more readily, and you become a group teacher. You don't go out and teach the people on the street, or you teach in the group. You teach the group. You become a model of what it means to be a soul. It's a good thing. Great. Those are good things, and so that's good in that respect. Now you could say, oh, well, wait a second, you skipped over. What about the people who go from the consciousness side? Yeah, if you go from the consciousness side, you move over to the sacrifice side and you become a group leader. So the people who have developed their consciousness on a personal level to a very high level and have done so consistently and given oftentimes on a more personal level to many others, they then are able to switch into the, when functioning in as a soul in their spiritual group, they oftentimes become the leader of the group, and they do so especially as they become accepted to move to the highest level, which is the first tier of level of working through one of the energy fields there, which is a big deal. Yeah. It is, all of this that's taking place, though, is taking place through sacrificing time and energy here that is being substituted for time and energy in the mental world, the higher mental world where our soul is. It's so weird. We are connecting ourselves through the sacrifice, givingness, and intelligent activity of our time and energy here so that it will connect us to our soul and eventually will become a living soul here through this whole model that I'm describing to you. It's a little complex, so you may not be following it so easily, but that's the advantage you have about time and energy. You can re-listen to the show as many times as you want, right? If you didn't get it the first time, you just say, what did he say? And you turn it back on again. So you got that choice. Okay. How does this... Now, I'm going to fit this... And I finally will finish with the highest level of energy that we can develop in our minds, but I want to, before I get to that, I want to talk about how does this fit into the practical side of being creating yourself into a spiritual group. Well, the first thing you want to be aware of is that if you want to know about this, if you're in a spiritual group and if this is all working out for the people in your spiritual group, you can listen to this model and apply it to the people around you and you can see it maybe even happening. Now, this is not so simple a thing, and it's not, you should also know that people sometimes can serve more than on one energy field. That's another thing to be aware of. If you're successful at going to the second tier, where your soul thinks from, by the way, and along one of these energy fields, you can simultaneously grab a hold of and serve at the lower level in your more personal interests with other people's personal interests, but trying to build that to the soul level in the third tier. So you can gain another pedal if you want. It's hard to do that, and some people don't succeed at it, but there's no end to the level that you can create yourself into a spiritual group. And as you create yourself into that spiritual group, you create more of the group. The group is all based upon the same thing. Everybody's time and energy. But being transferred from one dimensional part of reality to another, that's all part of us, but we are using our own bodies and senses to create ourselves into something anew. Wow. Pretty cool stuff. I probably lost some people. I went pretty fast on that thing. So it's really kind of, it's almost like building blocks. You're building here and you're building there. And you can simultaneously be building in two different places at the same time, more and more, of your ability to serve and co-serve with others. So eventually you can have multiple people, especially in these large first-level groups that are group service groups, all working on the same pedal. It's entirely possible and almost a certainty. And others that are working differently. And this is the fascination of this co-creative process, and it's why every group is different. Remember how I said that at the beginning of the show? You see, let's say you have 1,000 members. That's not unusual, by the way, in these group service groups. 1,000 members. Okay. And there's only three different expressions in three different fields that each person can be working under, except for the B big teacher if present, they have an extra three. But it doesn't matter. It's very limited if you think about this number here. And so what's happening is you got a lot of people, but with different combinations, working together. Some of them were similar, and some of them were the same, but everybody with some unique level of the use of the energy that they are working on that may be in common with 100 other people. And so you have this unique characteristic to each group which cannot be readily and easily found, because when you do the factorial on it, if you have 1,000 factorial, that's definitely into the Googleplex number that I talked about real early. That's such a big number, there's too many zeros on it to even figure it out. It's not even worth figuring. It just means that every group is like its own special thing. And it's all because each person is in co-service with their creator and with all their other group members that they may not even know them to be spiritual group, serving out there in the whole world to help bring some more light into the world, do something that's of good. That's what they're doing. Now, what about people who say, well, I believe in being totally independent. I don't want to have anything to do with any groups because groups are just, you know, some kind of communist nonsense. It's the anti-communism, believe me. This is the anti-communism. Everybody is doing this by choice. They're being entirely creative in their processes. It's the ultimate of creation. It is not a mindless, everybody is the same kind of show, so to speak, and where you're basically put into a box and told that this is where you live and this is it. Instead of being a safety kind of situation where people are just threatened by the world around them and want someone to take care of themselves, they instead seek to be highly creative, super creative, willing to give everything for sometimes nothing in any personal return, and that's definitely not communism. It's not even close. But it is spiritual groups and the way they work. They're really amazing. Now, it is true that a world service group is not really a capitalistic group in the sense that inwardly it's giving everything to the world of life. But it functions in the world capitalism fine if it has to create structures that relate to the model of having a business or something. But the problem is that they can only do this among themselves. They can't do it with anybody else. So they're limited for that standpoint. Yes, they're not going to become some giant mega corporation, because that would mean everybody in the corporation would be some kind of, you know, advanced spiritual person. It's asking for too much. But still, it fits in all models, and there's nothing you can't use within it, provided you realize you're not going to become some kind of mega company or something like that. It's okay as long as the individuals have the freedom to be creative. The model, the ism that you go by, is irrelevant if everybody's free and creative. And that's what God wants, is freedom and creation. It is the food of existence. Okay, so looking at this from the ultimate standpoint, where do we want to go with it? Well, the ultimate standpoint is to try to not only get to be your soul, which is fine, and if you get there, congratulations, because then you've released all these energies on the second part tier where your soul exists, and you've become your soul, living soul while you're physically alive. That's wonderful. It's terrific. And it has to be balanced and... But then you get to the next point. The next level is that you want to free your soul. Human souls are imprisoned in the second subplane of the second subplane. It's a weird place where they're very limited in their ability to be co-creative with God and with even other souls. They have to free themselves, and they free themselves by creating a much higher part of them with the help of the alter-egoed soul part of them, which is the solar angel, they seek to reach to the highest part of the monastic dimension. And to do this, they have to think outside of the dimension of just, well, it's a bit just, but being totally humble and creative within and for the group. Eventually, they have to be creative for all of humanity and the lower kingdoms. And that's when they reach the first tier, which is the highest level of thought. That's where the energy fields are all about, not their spiritual group, not the spiritual, the people the spiritual group directly serves, but now they have to serve mankind, and they have to serve, well, humankind, and they serve all of the lower kingdoms in balance with the humankind. And then, eventually, they have to co-serve with the kingdom of souls, or liberated souls, the next stage outside of, the next stage of being outside a human being, and being a living soul that is free, free living soul. Some people call masters. I know there's lots of names for them. The point is that these are beings who have exceeded the level of a human being, because they use their energy to not only create with others of like kind, like a spiritual group might be. They use their energies to serve all life on a planet, and sometimes for a number of planets, depending upon what level they are at, and to serve with a being called a monad in a three-dimensional periods of time is where they grow into, and three-dimensional periods of time where they serve from. The three-dimensional periods of time that they serve from are the mental, they serve two, I should say, excuse me, serve two, the mental, the astral, and the etheric physical. So that's, they serve there all at the same time. And then they serve from, and they serve in a growing understanding of three dimensions of time that they can't serve at all at the same time yet. They're trying to. And that is the Buddhic, got that, okay, which is sometimes called the intuitional. The Atmic, yeah, people like that. Some people say, oh, that's Nirvana. Yeah, well, that's another, there's actually a lot of names for that dimension. And then finally, the Monadic. And when they can serve through all three of those dimensions, then they have liberated themselves into a liberated Monad. They're no longer a member of the Kingdom of Souls. They're still part of a thing called the spiritual hierarchy, but that hierarchy goes beyond just the kingdom of souls. And so at that point, they have joined with this energy being called the solar angel, you know, the great being that has helped them all this time to be a soul. And so all this is ahead of us, and all of this has to do with the creation of a spiritual group, because believe it or not, these same beings that I just told you about, the masters of the ages, all those great beings, have spiritual groups that they create, and they create themselves. Their spiritual groups work in a totally different kind of system. I'll try to explain it to you as best as I can, but it no longer works on the time-energy model that you're so familiar with that I've been telling you about. Yeah, they don't have to worry about how much money they're going to get over that stuff, or how much time they're going to give, actually. And that's no longer the model that they have in terms of that. Their model is a pure model of love and creation and purely intelligent actions. A timeless state, some people call it, because of the purely intelligent. But at any rate, that's their model. They work on pure creation, pure consciousness, and pure intelligent activity. That's the commodities that they are functioning with. And you're probably scratching your head and saying, what? Because we don't work on that model. And as an exchange of what that model means, it doesn't make any sense to us. I mean, it'd be like me telling you that they work on the model of the eggs of frogs or something. I mean, you know, it'd be, well, what's that mean? That their model just has nothing to do with any of the things that we can relate to in a normal sense. If you're one of these beings, though, you see your reality as on a more universal level. You see that you're really becoming a part of your own creator on a fully conscious level rather than on a kind of slight awareness level, which is where humans are at. Now, what does it mean to fully consciously become your creator, I mean, to be God? It means that ultimately your experience will be a shared experience of what the universe is, was, is, and will be, from the point of view of your creator, of God. And that will be your experience. It will not just be, like, told to you, and you won't think about it, you won't just kind of project about it or imagine it. You'll experience the entire creation of the universe once you reach the epitome of that level. The interesting thing is that while it is both a timeless state and an instantaneous state, once having achieved it, the being then graduates from this universe and goes to one of several others. So it is not a small thing we're talking about here. It's a biggie. It's the ticket out of our universe, as we know it, into a much more advanced one. So it is a whole other trip, so to speak, to go on beyond the human. But yet they still belong and create themselves into a spiritual group. Now you say, what could a spiritual group do for a being who's become everything that is, was, is, and ever will be? Well, this is the weird thing about it. Each one of them experiences the universe in a unique way, even though it's before, during, and after. Because they create it for themselves, they make it unique for themselves, and they can share this with all the other great beings that are doing the same thing as a spiritual group, and that's what they do. And then all of that collectively becomes God, or is shared with God, is the best way to become it, to say it. But it has become God at the same time, because God is growing. And God says, well, I win, win, win. Everybody's winning. Because it grows at the exponential of all these other beings, while each being is growing from the shared experience of each other, which is different than being the total in the first place. And everybody's perspective is rewarded in a tremendously and wonderful way. And the meaning of that existence is beyond the human understanding. But for our own understanding, and for tonight, for tonight's show, which we're just about out of time on, the creation of a spiritual group comes from a person leading the most meaningful life they can possibly lead for themselves in this reality and in the next few. And so it is a very big deal. It comes from the ultimate reward of the ultimate most difficult thing to do, which is to create yourself into your soul while you're still here and in the next two dimensions. So this is the big deal. And that has best served today, not 100 years ago, but best served today, by doing it with others so that you all can experience both the joy and bliss eventually, but also the sorrow and difficulties and sometimes failures that happens by the creation of a spiritual group right here in this world. Until next week, and there will be a next week, I hope, this has been Niles McFlower for My Life Is.